Welcome to Celebrity Book Club,
the podcast where we read the memoirs of pop culture icons so you don't have to.
I'm Kara.
And I'm Carrie. And today's book is The Most of Nora Ephron by Nora Ephron.
Yay.
Woo freaking who.
Longtime listeners of the pod will know that Carrie is Nora Ephron's number one fan slash critic.
Okay. I don't think I'm her number one critic. And we will deep dive in this about the author about this, but like, I love Nora Ephron. I think she has made some of the most wonderful pieces of writing and film. And like, I honestly, she would be thriving. Nora Ephron's TV show in peak TV would have been incredible. She just would be doing something that no one else is doing.
Mm-hmm. In a way that like somehow appeals to everyone, but also is like very highbrow.
Yeah. She would have so much to say about Big Little Lies, and I would have loved for her to see and know about the existence of the Mindy Project.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Well, she died in 2012.
Yeah.
And the Mindy Project premiered in 2011. So maybe she knew it existed. Huh. I will get into all that. But so I love Nora Ephron. As I have gotten older, and the more I have read about her, I've read like a lot of pieces that other people have written about Nora. And I just don't think I would get along with her at all. And that's a bummer.
That is a bummer.
Like here is this person whose work I absolutely adore. Her writing voice is so perfect. She has some pieces of writing that are like, I feel seen and heard for the first time. Like mm-hmm. someone has finally put words to a feeling that I have. But then I hear about her insane dinner parties and the fact that if you couldn't carry a conversation, you wouldn't be invited to the next one. How like high stress and how intense her friendships and relationships were.
To me, if you have to like constantly try to like impress someone, like you constantly have to like prove your worth and your value, like you deserve to be there. It's like, fuck you.
Yeah. I don't need that. I'm past that phase of my life where I need to constantly be impressing people.
Mm-hmm. Do I still want to all the time? Of course. Yes.
Of course, I know that I don't have like, to. I definitely don't need a human being trigger of that in my life. I don't need a manifestation of that I'm actually trying to do that for. Like, exactly. I am working on undoing that behavior. I definitely don't need someone who is clamoring for it.
Yes, yes.
And finding out some of the people that she's mentored, like, I don't know, Lena Dunham is really tough for me.
Interesting.
When Nora Ephron passed away, Lena Dunham wrote like a whole piece about her relationship with Nora Ephron and specifically about like the person that Lena Dunham was dating at the time being like, well, why would you aren't even
Jack
done.
Antonoff?
No, it was pre Jack Antonoff.
Oh,
but it was like her college boyfriend. It was who Adam Driver was supposed to represent in Girls. And basically Nora Ephron said something along the lines of like, why would you waste time with him? You haven't even figured out who you are yet, which I think isn't like a fair point. I think,
sure. I wouldn't have said it like that, but yeah.
No, not at all. But like Nora is also older at this point and like comes from a very particular brand of feminism.
Yes.
That I'm sure we'll get into more, but I don't know. The idea that part of it is this right here is like Mindy Kaling was doing what the other girls weren't with romantic comedies.
Mm-hmm.
But you're mentoring Lena Dunham.
Doing what people are doing.
And like, it's so entitled and it's so specific and it's so niche. And like, there are things about Girls that are good. Like, I have enjoyed parts of that show. Mostly Adam Driver in a great V-neck sweater through like seasons 2 and 3, I think. Whew. That was probably the most important part of Girls to me. But Lena Dunham didn't need that.
Yeah.
And like, not that Mindy Kaling clearly didn't need it either.
To be
She's
mentored,
been very
yeah.
successful.
But like, if that scenario existed now and there was like a Nora Ephron mentorship program.
Yeah. And just like, here is a person who is taking the work that you've built and building upon it and taking it to the next level. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem like they got to have that kind of relationship. And that's not what do I know about any of these people? But sure. I was never expecting to hit the point in my life where I have complicated feelings on Nora Ephron, and it happened. Mm. And I think it's just kind of a realization that I probably have complicated feelings on just about every person. And if I don't have them yet, I probably will at some point.
That's kind of where I'm at with Tina Fey, who I think it's safe to say is my Nora Ephron.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely true.
In that, like, I love and acknowledge and recognize so much of what she was doing and continues to do, and also am able to, like, point to instances and be like, the way that that was handled or the choice that was made in this moment, like, I get what you were trying to do, but also maybe, like, pass the mic.
Yeah. And even as we say all of this, part of it is, like, white, cis, straight male creators get to just do all these things, and nobody has to imprint themselves on them and yes, be like, yeah. There's like, with both Nora Ephron and Tina Fey, we're talking about like this relatability and this desire to be their friend. Even with what we talked about with like Rachel mm-hmm. Bloom, like there's this like want to connect with them on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe they can just be auteurs, and like, maybe yeah. we can just let them do their thing, and we can disagree with parts of what they do and still be grateful for what they create. And I know that that's like a much larger, more difficult conversation, but
sure. Well, it's kind of like how we were talking last episode about, I don't know, I don't think it was on mic, but like before we recorded our last episode, we had both just watched Happiest Season.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about how when there is like an LGBT story, it has to be like, there's this idea that it has to be like perfect, that it has to represent like the perfect outcome and all the characters have to act perfectly. And I think in the same way of like, anytime there is a creator who is not a cis white male, mm-hmm. people want to hold them to a standard that's like, I want you to represent the thing that I want you to represent. I want you to be the voice that is in my head.
Yes.
I want you to be relatable. I want to be able to hang out with you.
And also, once I like your work, I have to think you're like a person I could be friends with.
Exactly.
You know what? I haven't thought about hanging out with Bong Joon-ho. I love Parasite.
Right.
I'm not like, let's go hang out on the weekends, because we don't have a like, there is no yeah. like shared level of identity. And like, why sure. do we do that with other people?
That's a great point.
Why do we need them to be relatable?
I mean, would I be friends with Clea DuVall? Obviously, yes. But like,
yeah, you absolutely would.
Absolutely, 100%. But it's like, why do I feel that? But then it's like, what if I'm not? What if I wasn't? Like, what if I ran into her and we like?
And like, what if she was having a shitty day? Or what if also like, she says she loves Ryan Murphy? What if she's like, yeah, Ryan Murphy's work is what I aspire to be. Like, what do you do in that situation? Are you like
I have no respect for you? Yeah, exactly. But then does that devalue anything of hers that I do love and enjoy?
Yeah.
Like, her acting performances, any of her directing performances? Like,
I don't know. I don't know what the full answer is.
A much more micro version of this is like finding out the other day that my girlfriend thinks that Minions are cute.
Oh my God, I'm so glad this is going to make it into a podcast.
Like, you know, when you like have that moment in a relationship where the other person not even likes or loves, but just like takes delight or like enjoys something that you could not care less about.
I get it. There are just some things where you're like, I have this version of you, and now I have to factor this new thing.
Right. And we have so many of the same opinions and thoughts and ideas, but then you like this thing that's like, that I don't even think about.
Yeah. And that's Nora Ephron's dinner parties to me are like, honestly, that seems so douchey. Like,
yes,
you seem so rude to me. But also, if you had never made You've Got Mail, where would I be? Who would I be as a person?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well, Carrie, we've already talked a lot about this, but do you maybe want to tell us in 60 seconds what this delightful book that you read this week is about?
Totally.
It is a thick book from what you showed me, So I don't feel like we'll discuss the whole thing, but would you like to give us a summary in 60 seconds?
Sure can do.
Amazing. Your time starts now.
The Most of Nora Ephron is a posthumous collection of her work. It includes several different sections, including but not limited to her work as a journalist, her work as an advocate, several of her profiles of famous women, her work as a novelist. It includes the entire Book of Heartburn. Her work as a playwright, so you have the whole script of Lucky Guy. Her work as a screenwriter, so you have all of When Harry Met Sally. It also has her foodie section, which are a series of her recipes and writing about food. Her work as a blogger, which includes some just like great content, and a series of personal essays. A lot of these works have previously been printed in different collections, but there are a few brand new things, including her commencement address for the Wellesley class of 1996 and other stuff.
Hooray!
Honestly, it's hard to talk about in like a collection. I could have chosen just like one of her collections of essays, but this massive book is kind of like my go-to when I want to find something. Mm-hmm. Her editor, Robert Gottlieb, describes that she didn't want like a best of collection ever. Like she didn't want something that was like rankings of her work.
Greatest hits.
Yeah, she didn't want a greatest hits. But so that's why the title they decided on together was The Most of Nora Ephron. Because it's like, here's a lot of Nora Ephron. Not all, but a lot.
I like that.
I do too. Again, there are so many things that I'm like, yeah, I like that way of looking at your life of like, here's quite a bit of my accomplishments, but I'm not going to rank them. No one else gets to decide what the very best pieces are, because I think you ask five different Nora Ephron stands, they're going to tell you five different like pieces of writing that meant something to them.
You almost said you don't get to whatever. And immediately my brain went, you don't get to call me a whore.
Yep. Basically, this is a Grey's Anatomy crossover pod whenever we can make it happen.
Well, I love that. We sort of have already done our about the author.
Yeah. Like. Is there anything else that you need to touch on, sort of like when and how you found Nora Ephron?
Well, as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, I am 10 to 15 years late on most cultural touchstones from my entire life. So all of the classiques I didn't really watch until like college or after college in some cases. So like When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail. I like was conscious of Nora Ephron as a force in the world, but don't know that I had any like real context for her until I was older. I forgot that she was a playwright. So thank you for reminding me of that.
Yes.
And I knew that she had done like various essays, profiles, articles. And it's interesting to me hearing you like list all those things that were in there, thinking about someone who sort of so seamlessly, in a time when we were really eager to pigeonhole creators to one medium. It's interesting to me that she sort of just like did it all.
Yeah, she really did. There's a lot, I think, that's like very interesting about the breadth of her work. Something that isn't in this, but that I've read about previously, she tried really hard to create a musical. I think it's about two women in publishing. Like it was like an attempt at like my favorite kind of musical theater is when there are two foils instead of like a romantic thing. But like, I love a Valjean Javert situation. Mm-hmm. I think that like that's the best kind of conflict that like musicals hold. And there isn't a good female driven equivalent of it, but like I'm sure the Wicked stands would murder me, but like but there are so many more examples of two male leads playing off of each other like that than there are two woman leads. And I think she was, and from what I remember reading about that, she was trying to create a version of that. It totally bombed, but I still think like what a
it
cool
existed
thing.
In some form.
It existed. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. We'll have to look it up during Mama Let's Research.
Great.
Because it's
can't wait.
Kind of a wild thing that happened.
Huh.
My introduction to Nora Ephron, though I didn't know it at the time, was through the lovely service of pay-per-view and my family sitting down to do a pay-per-view renting of You've Got Mail.
Really?
And just didn't know anything about it. Yeah. And so we sat down as a family and watched You've Got Mail. And I became obsessed with it. Aww. I was so obsessed with it that we were at my best friend's birthday party a few weeks later. And they were trying to pick something to watch. And pay-per-view, You've Got Mail had only started like 5-10 minutes ago. So we like, I convince everyone at this party to watch it. Now, we couldn't have been more than like 10 at the time.
Incredible.
And my best friend had a little sister. And I think her parents like had asked, like, is it okay? Is it like an okay thing to watch? I was like, yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And then the moment it cut into, because we were like 5 to 10 minutes in, is the scene where they're talking about phone sex.
Mm-hmm.
A thing that I like, and talking about cyber sex and, uh-huh, and talking about like hooking up with someone on the internet. Mm-hmm. And like, we're 10. So I just know that like sex is a word that you don't really talk about, but that's it. And, right, and like it goes, and I think if I'm pinpointing it now, that's the beginning of my anxiety. That's the first moment where I'm like, oh no, I've done something very wrong. But it lasted a minute. And then the rest of the movie was fine. Everybody was okay. But it was a very stressful 5 minutes at my friend Magda's birthday party. I didn't like realize it was like a Nora Ephron thing though. Like at that point, movies didn't have creators. They were just movies.
Right. Unless it was like, this is a Disney movie. And then I was like, okay.
Yes. Walt Disney himself from the grave made that movie. Like that's right. How they worked.
That for was a my long time. Understanding. Yeah.
And then eventually, like I figured that out in college was the first time I saw When Harry Met Sally. And then
really?
Yeah. The first time you saw it was probably because of me, right?
Yes. Because in Carrie's room, she had this old TV,
yep,
like a boxy ass gray TV. That was it set on a table or was it set on the floor?
It was on a dresser. It was like, yeah, on one of the like dorm room dressers.
There was, I think it had a DVD player like attached, yep, into the,
yeah,
TV.
It was like a built-in DVD player.
And the DVD that was always in there was When Harry Met Sally.
That's very true. That's very, very true. I then hit the phase of like, I want to be Nora Ephron. And now I am in my phase of I want to be myself. And there are things I like about Nora Ephron. And there's a Venn diagram and we overlap in some places and we don't in others. And that's where I am.
That's the best place to be, I think.
Yeah. I think it's like a very healthy look at celebrities. That's what you come here for, folks. You come here for healthy, well-adjusted takes, not chaotic energy at all.
No, there's nothing chaotic about us.
The listeners are like, this is boring. Where is the drama?
The drama.
Carol, I think it's time to play a game.
Oh.
Are you ready to play Guess That Chapter? Okay. Nora Ephron's book is, this particular compilation is 557 pages, of which I've read every word, probably multiple times, but we definitely do not have time to cover the entire thing. So instead, we're going to pick one iconic chapter that stood out the most. I will say, I changed my chapter 4 different times before doing this podcast.
One of which was as we were logging onto the Zoom call.
Yes. Yes. So it's very fresh. But it's time to play Guess That Chapter.
Bring it on.
Here are your major characters. Nora Ephron. Carl Bernstein. Delia Ephron. And Mike Nichols. The settings are New York, LA, and DC. And that's pretty much all you're getting.
Okay. I know who Mike Nichols is. Delia Ephron, I'm assuming, is her daughter.
Sister.
Okay, great. Great. Carl Bernstein is a name that I know, but that I don't know if I could identify who this person is.
You're going to sound real ignorant in a minute. Keep going.
Isn't her husband? I don't know.
One of her husbands.
Okay, great. I'm assuming that this is a chapter. New York, LA, DC. They don't really do Kennedy Center Honors for authors, do they?
I have no idea.
I think it's mostly like forward-facing creatives.
Mm.
but maybe this is her talking about her musical that she tries to do is for some reason, like, in my brain. DC to me is like, you know, last stop.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, in
our world, DC is where you take a show for out of town tryouts. So,
yes, exactly. Yes. There's usually one somewhere else, and then there's one in DC, and then it goes to New York.
Yep. All that tracks.
Yeah, I think that's my guess.
Okay. It is not that.
Great. This, I didn't think so.
This chapter is a previously written essay that is in her book of essays, I Feel Bad About My Neck. But this essay is my life in 3,500 words or less.
Wow.
So this is basically kind of a mini memoir on Miss Nora Ephron herself.
I love that. This is a great little summary for me.
So, you know, Carl Bernstein's name isn't mentioned. Carl Bernstein, Kara, is one half of Woodward and Bernstein, of the Watergate scandal and All the President's Men.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
And also is Nora Ephron's second and most tumultuous spouse.
How many did she have?
Three.
Okay.
Three.
That's a good number.
Yeah. She really settled in with her final partner, Nick, who I don't know if they ever actually got married or just lived together, but they spent the majority of their life together. The novel Heartburn is based off of Carl Bernstein's illicit affair. And all of this will come up. So why don't I just tell you about this fucking chapter instead of just telling you bits and pieces about her life. This chapter is the story of my life in 3,500 words or less. It is broken down into these little segments with some titles. So like the first one is, If I Can Just Get Back to New York, I'll Be Fine, where she describes being 5 years old and moving from New York to LA and how she just spent the rest of her childhood wanting to get back to New York, which she eventually did.
That's hilarious at 5 years old that she was like, fuck this shit.
Yeah. Imagine making New York such a part of your brand at 5 years old. I just imagine an insufferable elementary school student.
Like, oh my God. An insufferable human until she left.
Honestly, New York people, of which we are too.
We are. Suck.
Suck. Just like really make being in and around New York a part of their identity in a way that it's just like, it's a fine city. It does the trick.
Like, I complain about it all the time.
If someone else says that to me, I'll be like, oh, it's a wonderful, magical place. And it's like, no, it's fine.
Yeah. It's like, do I want to be somewhere else? No. Do I like living here? No.
That's it. The sort of next section, which is really like a framing device for Nora's life, is called What My Mother Said. And it's basically two pieces of advice from her mother. One is everything is copy, which is something that she would continue to say throughout her life.
And that you say a lot.
I say a lot. One of her children used that quotation to do a documentary about Nora Ephron, one of her sons that she had with Carl Bernstein.
How many kids does she have?
I think just two.
Oh.
I think she had two boys, both with Carl Bernstein.
Got it.
She does that. Then there's a brief story about her journalism teacher and learning. And then one of my favorite ones is, I swear to God, Janice Gladman will never laugh at me again. And it is, I love the title. It's like kind of a deeply upsetting story, but it starts with, I go off to college. I weigh 106 pounds. I come back from college 3 months later. I weigh 126 pounds. Both of those weights are fucking gross. Sorry. No, there's no body shaming because different people have different weights, but like it's very uncomfortable. And she says, I was once thin and shapeless. Now I'm fat and ironically equally shapeless. Like, she has such bad body image stuff throughout all of this. It's like a really tough hang with Nora.
Sure.
But she basically goes to her neighbor Janice Gladman's house to borrow clothes from her because Janice Gladman was like the fat friend. Mm-hmm. And Nora doesn't fit in any of Janice Gladman's clothing. And Janice Gladman laughs. And the next day I go on a diet. In 6 months, my weight drops back to 106. I have been on a diet ever since. I have not seen Janice in more than 40 years, but if I do see her, I'm ready. I'm thin. Although I now weigh 126 pounds, the exact amount I weighed when I came home from college, having become a butterball, I cannot explain this. Which is so well written and so deeply gross.
Yeah.
Janice Gladman is an incredible name, though, for it. Like,
oh, yes.
And to have a, I love a nemesis story. I wish it didn't surround body image, but
sure.
Honestly, that's a huge part of Nora Ephron's identity, is like being thin.
Like, hearing that sentence sounds like something that Carrie Fisher would say in When Harry Met Sally.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Like, I hear I'm her ready. Saying it.
Yes.
At brunch.
Yes. If I ever see Janice Gladman again, I'm ready. It's like very, very good.
Yes.
She talks about one of her first engagements, how this section is, I'm not going to marry Stanley J. Fleck. And basically she's like, I'm engaged to be married. Everyone I know is engaged to be married, but I don't think I'm going to marry this person. Like, she really did grow up in a time where you went to college and like found your spouse and locked it down,
mm-hmm.
which makes some of her behavior so revolutionary.
Sure.
She then does a few sections on, I'm going to be a newspaper reporter forever, in which she tells this great story that she tells longer in other places, but she and her friends created a satirical newspaper making fun of the New York Post. And it was so good.
That's such a Carrie thing.
It's great. Thank you. That's like such a high compliment to me.
Yeah.
And the New York Post liked the satirical newspaper so much that they hired her. And basically it was like, if she can make fun of the Post that well, she can write for the Post.
Wow. That's lit.
That's the dream. That's negging. That's like what negging was invented for. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm gonna like ruin you so hard that you have to hire me to impress you. Like, it's so good.
That's what I want to happen with this podcast.
Oh my God. Yeah. That we neg our way into ghostwriting celebrity memoirs.
Yes.
Yes. Honestly, that's it.
Honestly.
So that section is titled, I'm going to be a newspaper reporter forever. The next one is, I may not be a newspaper reporter forever. And that's where she like is hanging out with her editor, and her editor tells her to stand underneath the stoop of his apartment, and he moves an awning that has like, it has rained, and he like pulls the awning up so that gallons of water pour all over her, and he thinks it's hilarious.
That's kind of shitty.
It's so shitty. And it makes me think of a lot of what Rachel Bloom talked about in those early writers' rooms of like not being able, like, women can't take a joke. Like, if you're the only person in a room, you can't take a joke. Uh-huh. I think about Mindy and The Office and the amount that those writers just like wrote about her personal life into that story, and mm-hmm. how it seems like she's fine with it. But
also it's like, are you?
And like, it seems like this just happens a lot if you are the one person in the room. If you're the only one, you have no backup. And I just,
yeah.
It's gross. She keeps going back and forth to what her mom said about everything is copy. And she says this great thing of like, I now believe what my mother meant when she said everything is copy is this. When you slip on a banana peel, people laugh at you. But when you tell people you slipped on a banana peel, it's your laugh. So you become the hero rather than the victim of the joke.
Ooh.
Which I think is actually a large way how you and I live our lives, right? Like,
I think so too. Yeah.
I think whether for good or for bad, we're both like really comfortable talking about like embarrassing things that have happened to us, our flaws. Like, mm-hmm. if someone else says it, it's hurtful. But if we know,
but hey,
exactly. Exactly. It's like, only I can say that about myself. Like,
right. Yeah,
that's a huge part of like what we do. And I love the way she frames it of like,
it's your laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really great. That.
So she talks about her first marriage. She doesn't name him. Pretty easy to find his name. That they were married for 6 years. He had an obscene number of cats, like just had a ton of cats. And an anecdote that she tells all the time in lots of places is like, she says that she's going to divorce him. And he's basically like, no, don't divorce me. And even if you did, like, I want to go to Africa with you. Like, you're the only person I want to travel with. So they go to Africa and they get back from Africa. And she's like, okay, I'm going to divorce you now. And he's like, but I took you to Africa, which is just
That's hilarious. Incredible. Actually.
It's so good. She then has another segment called Everything is Copy. And this is where she talks about how when she's 7 months pregnant with her second child, she finds out that her husband is having an affair. This is her second husband. This is Carl Bernstein. And basically she's like, everything is copy. And so she writes about it. So she writes this novel, Heartburn, which is just kind of an exceptional piece of writing. And it's like wild that it's called a novel because so many of those things actually happened. Like if you ever read Heartburn or if you watch did Mike Nichols direct the movie? I don't know, but it's Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson as Nora Ephron and Carl Bernstein. And it's old, right? So it doesn't hold up in quite the same way, but there are like wild, wild scenes in it, including but not limited to they're having dinner with friends. Jack Nicholson has like moved back. Carl Bernstein has like moved back in. They're going to try to make it work. But she found out, like, I was about to say that he was still texting her, but like, it's obviously not that. Like in my mind, I've conflated it with something else. But like, he found out that they were still communicating, that they were still seeing each other, and that like, he really loved her. And they're having dinner and they're having fish. And the Nora Ephron character goes to open a bottle of red wine, which everyone thinks is weird because you don't have red wine with fish, which is such like a Nora detail of like, who the fuck cares? Drink what you want when you want. Like,
sure. But also like, if that's a moment that happened to you, the specificity of that is something that you remember forever.
Yes. And so she like opens the bottle of red wine and isn't to drink. It's to pour on Carl Bernstein's head. Like she just fully cracks, which is just, it's iconic.
Oh my God.
It's so good. I love it
when women snap.
Who doesn't love
Amazing Amy?
Amazing Amy energy all the time. But who doesn't love when a wronged woman just decides it's time to like fuck some shit up? Oh, it's so good.
The best.
So she talks about writing about it and one of the things she says like is you can't make this stuff up, and then she says on the other hand perhaps you can make this stuff up. And so she says, so I write a novel, I change my first husband's cats into hamsters, and I change the British ambassador into an undersecretary of state. That's the woman Carl Bernstein had an affair with. And then she says, and I give my second husband a beard. So it's just like, I changed three things, so I made up, so some of the book isn't true.
Oh my God.
Which I just love. And then the part where we get to Delia, who is her sister and writing partner a lot of the time. You've Got Mail is co-written with Delia. A lot of her later years work is Nora and Delia doing it together, which I always thought was great.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
And it's one of the saddest things about divorce. And it's to her sister talking about how, like, when you get divorced, you don't hear your parents' love story anymore. Like, which... looking at your face, not for some people, like you've never heard your parents' love story.
Yeah, like, right. Huh?
But like, what? They're talking about how in their childhood, they always knew that their like mom and dad like fell in love as summer camp counselors. And like they had heard this and they said like, and so Delia says like, one of the saddest things is like, you never really hear about, for divorced kids, you never really hear about like how their parents fell in love because like it's as not a child, back to
the child doesn't like think about it anymore or talk about it.
Or, like, the parents don't bring it up. I think it's, like, an interesting and sweet moment, but I think...
it's not registering with me.
It's not. Well, and also, like, it's not a thing that... It's... This is the thing about the Ephron women. They talk about very specific things as though they're universal.
And sometimes they are.
And sometimes it feels like it's the first time anyone's ever, like, given voice to that. Yeah. And then there are other things that's, like... this isn't as universal as you think it is.
Yeah.
Like, you think you're saying a profound thing about divorce, but plenty of, like, couples that stay together for a long time, like, don't talk about that either. But yeah. Yes, that's great.
That's hilarious. I love that you're like, your face is telling me you don't understand what I'm saying.
That's clearly not it. The Mike Nichols part of this is that it's about Nora Ephron with Alice Arlen, who I don't really know, wrote a script for the movie Silkwood. And Mike Nichols was going to be busy directing a Broadway show, But then he was betrayed by a friend, basically. Like, it was a little scandalous. He was thought he was going to be working out. So instead, he directs Silkwood, the movie. And as they're working on it, every time Mike Nichols comes up with an idea, it's basically, like, to rewrite the script so it's about a betrayal of friendship now. And it's...
Oh, Mike Nichols. I didn't know that Mike Nichols directed Silkwood.
Neither did I.
I feel like I knew it in my brain, but it's like a fact that I forgot.
I forget a lot about, like, Mike Nichols's work and career. And, like, I know he's very involved in a lot of people's stories that I care about.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, in this story, and, like, Mike Nichols' desire to change everything is sort of like a turning point for Nora Ephron of, like, she no longer feels a connection to journalism and instead is, like, interested in what makes the best story. Mm. Which I like that she is a person whose career evolved, right? Like, she started as a straight up journalist, then she moved into, like, magazine writing and other forms of writing, and then she wrote a novel. Like, she had 7 careers all connected to writing in many ways, but, like, she sort of tackled a bunch of different things, and I think there's something really cool about that. And that, like, this thing that you loved, you don't have to love it anymore.
Right.
Like, I know we were just talking about that last week, but, like, the idea with, you can combine all your interests and it can work really well together, but also you can reach a point where this thing that was important to you stops being kind of important.
Yeah. And how funny now that, like, I don't really even see that delineation in her career. I'm just like, she's a writer. She's this great writer. And I don't think about, like, the shift for her going from, like, journalism to essay writing to, you know, writing movies. You know, like, I don't separate those things out in my mind. Whereas to her, they were all very, like, distinct phases
of her life. Yeah. And, like, there's some overlap towards the end, but they very much are like, I am this, now I am this, which I think is interesting. Hmm. One of the last sections in here is just a chunk of text from When Harry Met Sally, which is the, why don't you tell me the story of your life? Nothing's happened in my life yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing that ends with, like, suppose nothing happens to you. Suppose
in the car,
whole
right,
life.
The
yeah. In the car. Yeah, yeah. In the beginning, you never meet anyone. You never become anything. And finally you die. One of those New York deaths where nobody notices for 2 weeks until the smell drifts out into the hallway. Like, she just includes that towards the end of her story of, like, if she's summarizing her life in 3,500 words or less, it's like, what if nothing ever happens to you? Like, to have had all of this happen and to still kind of feel some connection to that.
It's like your week of 9/11. Nothing interesting ever happens to me.
I caused it. It's all my fault. The last few sections. So there's, 3 sections left. One is a guy walks into a restaurant, and that's where she meets her third partner, Nick. And basically, it's literally just the moment where he comes up to her and is like, how can I find you to get in touch again? And, like, that's the only mention of him in her life, but it's still important enough to be there. Like, it's a perfect blend of, like, she's her own person, and also her relationships have shaped her life, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love that.
And then there is a little thing of, there's a screening room and they don't have enough chairs. And so they try to get kids to double up. And Nora turns to her friend, Bob Gottlieb, who is the editor, editor / compiler of this book. And basically says, like, we should have just set up chairs, like, extra chairs for the kids. And he turns to her and says, you can't do everything. And she was like, it was a little late to be learning this lesson, which I think it's like a very nice almost ending. And then the final piece is that she bought a red coat the other day, which is the advice that her mother gave her never to do, which she just always finds a way to, like, frame it back.
Yeah, like weave, like, in that last little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah. So that is Nora Ephron's life in 3,500 words or less.
Wow. I love that. And I learned a lot about her in those 35 words, because I didn't really know anything about her personal life. I just sort of knew the breadth of her work.
She's had such fascinating phases in her life. And I think that, that, like, Delia moment is a good thing to hit on of, like, what actually is both the thing I love and the thing that frustrates me so much about her is that like specificity viewed as universality of like, if she just like let it be specific and let it be specific to only her, other people would feel connection to it. But it's this desire to...
when you try to paint it on everything.
Yeah, it's like a real broad brush.
I find myself doing that sometimes, especially about things that happened to me when I was younger.
Mm.
And only recently have I realized like, oh, that's actually not like a common experience. It's like, okay, the other day while I was doing dishes, I had on the 30 Rock episode where it's the season 3 one, the Christmas one, where Jack's mom is visiting for Christmas and he accidentally hits her with his car.
Mm-hmm. Great episode.
And it's this whole thing where he thinks he's like so frustrated with her and she's so frustrated with him. And then it's like the end of the night and he's like, the woman who's supposed to play Mrs. Claus just dropped out.
Yes.
Like how you can't have Christmas Eve without Mrs. Claus. And Liz Lemon is like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, that's not a thing. Like your mom invented that to like make you kids feel like Christmas could still happen, even though your dad wasn't around to like be Santa.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so there's like good versions.
There are. And I think like, I think that's what works. And I think if we've learned anything in the 8 years since Nora Ephron passed away is that like, you can get hyper specific with a story and people will still find a way to connect to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge is that happens in some of her writing is the idea that this happened to me, so it must have happened to everyone. Whereas instead, like, just don't pretend that it happened to everyone. Talk about your experience. Your experience is valid enough. But I think when you are, in many cases, the first woman to be doing a lot of the things that she was doing, half of her existence has been pitching that, like, these are actual universal experiences that everyone has.
Right. To not be like, this is my specific experience, because nobody wanted to hear about.
I mean, to literally get a writing credit on When Harry Met Sally to be like, Rob Reiner and Billy Crystal know, like, some of the things you are saying, like, that's never happened to a woman before. Like, right. let me come in and do the punch up for this, because this is what women actually think. And so for so long, she had to be the voice for
all women.
Women. And it's like, this isn't it.
Whereas like someone like Carrie Fisher, who I think is, I would say has like a similar voice to Nora Ephron. Would you say that's fair?
I think that's very fair.
Is very aware of the fact that her experiences are incredibly specific.
Yeah.
And in a very similar way, wrote a very autobiographical novel that highlights the like hyper specificity of her life and her situation growing up as the daughter of a movie star.
Yeah.
And like how that super shaped her world, you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That is. Mama, let's research.
Mama, let's research. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Celebrity Book Club.
This episode of Celebrity Book Club is brought to you by Betty White. Why? I don't know. She's everywhere.
What did you look up?
I looked up Imaginary Friends, which is the short-lived musical that she wrote, which is about...
Yes.
The longtime rivalry between writers Lillian Hellman and Mary McCarthy. Lillian Hellman, I'm of course familiar with. For some reason, I'm not familiar with Mary McCarthy. She is also a novelist, an activist. And apparently she and Lillian Hellman knew each other in school and then were sort of like longtime nemeses. The musical portrays them as fact and fiction. And the two of them, the plot apparently is the two of them meeting in hell and rehashing their decades old relationship. I see why it only ran for 3 months.
3 months. Ooh, okay. Well, you know what? I encourage someone to try to make a revival happen because I want to see it.
Well, so the original cast was, when it premiered at the Old Globe, was Cherry Jones and Swoozie Kurtz.
Swoozie Kurtz. Like, yeah, that's a good booking for sure.
How can you fail?
Well, if you set it in hell, that's how.
Yes. And the music I learned was written by Marvin Hamlisch, who is one of only two people. The other person is Richard Rodgers, to have received a PGOT, which is an EGOT and a Pulitzer.
You know what? I think we now have goals for ourselves. We're all trying to PGOT out here.
Done. A Pulitzer would be dope.
Pulitzer would be great. Honestly, would rather have the P than some of the other letters.
That's true. honestly, than the G. There's no way I'm getting a G unless it stands for Golden Globe. Correct. I think a substitute can be made. I think it has to be sometimes. The Golden Globes are, because TV is such a big deal now, the Golden Globes are just as important as any of those other awards.
Honestly, they are, which is bizarre because the Golden Globes are decided by like 70 people.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's wild.
That's insane. But they have as much sway as the Academy.
That's true. That's true.
Carrie, what did you look up?
All right. Here's what I looked up. I knew I was going to look this up because it's the thing I always want to talk about recently when Nora Ephron comes up. A few months ago, earlier in the Quar, an article came out about Dave Franco and his wife, my nemesis, Allison Brie, about creating an elevated rom-com. They had been working and it's something that Dave wanted to direct and Allison to star in, and about creating something that really elevates the genre. You know, like a When Harry Met Sally or a Sleepless in Seattle. And they also list Pretty Woman, which Pretty Woman is so problematic. Not like Nora's created like perfect pieces of cinema.
Sure.
But an elevated rom-com is what
they keep. So you just want to remake rom-coms from the 90s is what I'm hearing.
And you just, yeah, you want to make a movie as good as Nora Ephron could. Like, but she didn't elevate the genre. In fact, for years, Nora Ephron movies were like a derogatory term. I'm sure there are some cinephiles who could at me about it even now.
Yeah.
Like Nora Ephron only recently gained sort of the prestige in the field, and yeah, most of it is posthumously. Like, also, Homegirl Maid Bewitched, you know? Like,
yeah,
we've all got layers. We're all complicated human beings.
Homegirl Maid Bewitched.
I don't think the world is ready for how much I dislike Allison Brie.
She kind of sucks.
She sucks. She sucks. She sucks so hard.
I hate her stupid face.
I really dislike her. I have a hard time with Community stands might come for me for this, but like, I have a hard time with people who didn't think that Dan Harmon was going to be skeezy and gross if you watch Community, because Allison Brie's character is just like a neurotic sex pot. Like,
yeah,
has high anxiety and tits. Like that's the whole personality.
Yeah.
And y'all thought that Dan Harmon was your king. I don't get it. Couldn't be me. And anyway, I should not blame people for taking the work that they take, but I do. Not to go full your mother with Demi Moore on the cover of Vanity Fair, but like a little bit. Why are you signing up for parts that are that limited? She's very nice on Glow. She's doing something on Glow. Betty Gilpin is doing so much more. But like, she's not it for me. I don't like Allison Brie.
I love this about you. I also do not like her, but mostly for petty reasons. I just don't like her stupid face.
Yeah, that's fine. You can not like her stupid face. I enjoy a Dave Franco performance. I think he's really great in the Jump Street cinema saga.
Oh, he is.
He's James Franco's brother.
Brother, right. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. I had to Google his face. Okay.
Yeah, I have enjoyed him on screen. The idea of the two of them together writing and creating a romantic comedy and thinking that that's valid makes me want to die. And then calling it elevated, it's just, you really think you're that good? You really think you're hot shit? I can't wait. I'm going to watch it once I'm sure that they're getting the littlest amount of money for it. And I am going to heckle the shit out of it. And I hate it. And I just hate that people like think you just get to be Nora Ephron in a day.
Right.
Like I don't like, think I'm Nora Ephron. Yeah, yeah. Like you think, oh, I watched Harry Met Sally a lot. I now know how to make a high quality romantic comedy. Also, those movies exist in the way that they did because audiences were different, because people had to go see a movie because there wasn't as much on television. Like, everything about it is just like, I don't like you, and I don't like your audacity and your energy, and stay away from me. Stay away from me, Allison Brie. You know what you did.
Stay away. You know what you did.
I know you've been banging down my door trying to get me to like you. It's never going to happen. It'll take years.
eons.
Everyone saw how long it took me to forgive Jennifer Aniston. So.
I was about to say, you were talking about this article and I was like, oh, is this going to be about Jen? But then I was like, no, she likes Jen.
I like Jen now. I watch The Morning Show.
What a turn that was for you in 2020. I think that's your biggest character shift in 2020.
I've never forgiven a human being with the exception of Jennifer Aniston. She's the only one whom that wall has fallen for. And honestly, sometimes I forget. Sometimes she'll post something or do something and I like truly am like, oh man, I have like three things I want to say. And then I think about the fact that I really enjoyed The Morning Show. I'm not proud of it. I don't want to have liked The Morning Show, but I did. And her performance in it.
Ditto.
So Alison Brie is my nemesis. She would not be invited to my dinner party.
Nor mine, because I do not host. Nor can I cook.
Well, that brings us to our final segment of the week. It's not. We still have more to go. But that brings us to Six Degrees of Laura Bell Bundy. I figured mine out while we were talking. Oh, but good. Do you want to go first?
I sure. Yes. So Nora Ephron, of course, You've Got Mail, which stars Meg Ryan.
Yep. Great.
Meg Ryan is the voice of Anastasia.
Yes.
In the 1997 animated film Anastasia.
Yes.
One of the greatest movies ever, by the way.
Absolutely.
Bernadette Peters also voices a character in that movie. She voices the like sex pot cousin of the Dowager Countess. Yes.
Yes.
Is that her name?
Yeah, her name is Sophie.
No, the Dowager Countess is the character from Downton Abbey.
The
Dowager.
The Dowager, yeah. I think she's just the Dowager.
The Queen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, Bernadette Peters voices Sophie. Bernadette Peters was on Smash.
Great.
With Christian Borle, who was in Legally Blonde with Laura Bell Bundy.
Fantastic. Really, really good work. Love it. Love it.
I've tried this a couple times to go to the Baranski route because Bernadette Peters played girl from Game of Thrones' mom on The Good Fight, which Christine Baranski is in. I know that the connection is there from Baranski to Bell Bundy, but I can't figure it out.
You'll crack it.
I'll crack it.
And I think once you've cracked it, that'll be the time to retire LBB.
I think so
too. In our 6 degrees.
Yeah.
This is now, the clock is counting down until Kara can figure out a good Christine Baranski connection.
Pressure's on. What did you do?
Nora Ephron co-wrote and directed You've Got Mail, which featured Parker Posey as Tom Hanks's girlfriend.
Huh. I love Parker Posey so much.
Me too. Parker Posey is also featured in, yeah, we have to do that. I've also read segments from her book and it's
unhinged.
Bonkers. Oh, you sent me pictures from it. That's why I know about it. Absolutely unhinged. We will have to cover Parker Posey's book. Parker Posey is also featured in the film Josie and the Pussycats, which stars Rachel Lee Cook as Josie. Rachel Lee Cook stars in She's All That with Freddie Prinze Jr., who is married to Sarah Michelle Gellar, who co-starred in Buffy the Vampire Slayer with Allison Hannigan. Allison Hannigan, who starred in How I Met Your Mother, of which Laura Bell Bundy frequently guest starred.
Wow.
That's like seven or eight steps, but I got there.
That's so good, though. You really took us through so many mediums, so many and time like, periods.
A lot of my favorite pieces of work.
Yes.
Like, to get a Buffy the Vampire Slayer ref in there, I'm pleased with it.
Is that your first Buffy ref?
Maybe. I mean, in LBB, absolutely. It comes up in other spaces in the pod sometimes.
Of course. Who doesn't love Buffy?
Usually when talking shit about Joss Whedon. So it's time to talk about franchising Nora Ephron.
Well, Alison Brie is apparently already trying to do it. So
Alison Brie is trying to do it and fuck her.
Fuck Alison Brie.
Fuck Alison Brie. Oh, biggest takeaway from the pod. I think like Nora's done most of it herself already at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has moved in a lot of the spaces. And like, here's the problem. And this is why we don't EGOT all the time. Like, she created some of the greatest movies of all time and did not get enough awards for them. Like,
true.
I do stand by what I said earlier in the episode of like, I would love to see what she would do in the golden age of television. I would love to see what she created.
Me too. I would love for her to have another crack in a musical, whether it's the same weird two people hashing out their differences in hell idea, or I would love to see Nora Ephron pen the book and perhaps some of the lyrics of like a title of show-esque musical. Mm-hmm. You know, something like Small and Stupid.
Yeah, like a real black boxy thing, like a college theater piece for sure.
Beloved by 20-year-olds.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, put her, if she could have worked with Jason Robert Brown, they could have made something magical, I think.
I agree with that, even though I hear he's kind of an asshole, but like.
Yeah, I don't care.
I feel like if anyone could handle him.
I think she spent most of her life working with a lot of assholes and figured it out. And I think she was kind of an asshole too. And I think that is all fine.
Yeah. People contain multitudes.
Yeah. It brings us to our final segment, which is Guess That Author. Kara, you read or are in the process of reading or are going to buy next week's book.
Uh-huh, that one.
So why don't you give us three clues about our author for next week?
Sure thing. This person, in the vein of Nora Ephron, has starred in many rom-coms throughout their career.
Great.
This person has a catchphrase.
Great.
And once again, this person is in our least talked about demographic on the pod.
Great.
Several of you have asked about this person, if we will be reading their book. The answer is yes. If you have a guess for next week's author, you can find us at Celeb Book Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Kara can be found on Twitter and Instagram at _KPRO. That's _KAYPRO.
Carrie can be found on Twitter and Instagram at CFOST Talks A Lot. That's the letter CFOST Talks A Lot.
Thanks for listening to Celebrity Book Club.